Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today we're going to talk about 10 steps to owning the perfect puppy. So we'll start with step one. It's called work for food. So you want to elaborate, Cass?
Cool. Yeah. So with puppies, usually the biggest resource that puppies really care about is food. It's something that's innately very valuable to them. And usually people kind of don't really use it as a tool. They just kind of overfeed puppies and leave food out all the time. So the best things you can do with food, I guess the worst things you can do with food, are leave food out all the time or make food kind of appear in abundance for the puppy. So when you feed them a lot, or you pretty much leave the food open all the time. The best thing to do to really create a good working relationship with your puppy and create a good foundation of skills is to have them work for the food every day. So basically what that means is you just want to teach them a few little small commands, really easy engagement stuff. So like, even if they make eye contact with you, you can say good and give them a reward. That can be sort of a job that you give your puppy and teach them. That's basically how they get paid every day, right? So money, we work for money. Puppies are basically going to work for food. That's going to be their job every day. Pretty much that's it for that.
I'd say like all the puppies that we meet that come in our facility, they are lazy.
They're super lazy. All of them. And fat.
Lazy and fat. And lazy they don't want to move. And we've never had that issue with our dogs. And it's just because we have a different perception when it comes to food. We use food as a tool. Right. Instead of just as food for the dog. It's a tool to help build engagement and a good relationship.
People often offer too many options for puppies too. Like, they notice that because they're overfeeding the dog's not finishing all their food. So then they start adding all kinds of toppers and like beef liver and chicken and all this kind of stuff to the food. And usually that makes the dog a little bit pickier as well. And then in addition to that, they also give them like 25 different types of treats to see what they really, really like. The best thing to do with puppies is to keep the food options pretty minimal. So for the most part, the only treat you should really be giving them is like their own kibble for work. But if you have a dog that needs a lot of motivation in certain situations, just little things like cheese and hot dogs for just certain situations is the best route. So don't give too many options. Don't like start adding toppers to their food, all that kind of stuff.
Perfect.
Cool.
Next point.
Step number two is to use the crate right away. So a lot of times people with new puppies, they'll use the crate as a reactive tool as opposed to a proactive tool. And basically what I mean by that is they notice that the puppy's eating all their shoes and the baseboards and all this kind of stuff and peeing all over the house. So then they decide, okay, maybe the crate is a good way to go to kind of punish a lot of that behavior. But it's really just a better way to prevent a lot of that kind of stuff from happening in the first place. And then a lot of people, they wonder like, okay, if putting them in the crate is kind of avoiding the issue. The thing is, when your puppy is a baby and it's kind of occupying itself and getting into all kinds of trouble, it's basically developing different habits. So if your dog starts chewing on your baseboards when it's like 8 weeks old and then it continues to do that for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, that's going to become an adult behavior as well, right? So if you kind of prevent a lot of that right now, make the options pretty minimal when they come out of the crate, then you won't really have that issue of a lot of those behaviors developing into adulthood as well. So crate should always happen pretty much right away. And it also helps prevent a lot of separation anxiety with puppies too. So a lot of people bring puppies home, they have it sleep in their bed the first 4, 5, 6 nights, and then they're like, now I'm going to put it in the crate. The puppy's already getting a little attached to you. And then they'll start screaming and crying, and then the owner will take them out of the crate as well, which then you've really got yourself into a bad, bad trap.
And most people, what they do is they get their dog, and the first day or two, the dog's kind of lazy and soft.
Yes.
You know, the dog doesn't show any of their bad behavior. Then day three or four, when the dog gets comfortable, then the dog gets more crazy. But what everyone does is they always say, oh, my dog's amazing in the crate. First day or two, you know, they jump the gun. And then they start reducing the crate time heavily because the dog's doing so good. And the dog starts acting like a complete jerk on day four and five. Screaming, going crazy, running around. And then once the dog starts biting everything and getting crazy and comfortable, then they try to put the dog in the crate and the dog starts screaming, and then they, everyone quits. Like, no, I can't do this. I can't deal with my dog crying. I don't know what to do. And then they've taught their dog that screaming gets them out of the crate, and now they've dug themselves a pretty deep hole. So use the crate. Use it all the time. Like, the puppy should be in the crate a lot. I know every puppy we've raised, like my puppy now, she is only out of the crate when we're doing something fun and when she's engaged with me. And even if she's doing something passive, I make sure I reward her as much as possible. So an example of passive, and we'll talk more about this, is if I'm cooking and she's out of the crate, she'll lay down beside me and I'll throw her little scraps of food. I'm just going to reward her for holding it down. But besides that, she's in a crate and she's relaxed and she's sleeping. Good. Next point.
Next is kind of connected to the crate, is to create a good schedule. So creating a good schedule for a puppy prevents a lot of issues like we were talking about before with property destruction, exactly. basically, yeah. And potty issues as well. So using the crate to kind of create and enforce that schedule that you've kind of set for your puppy is very, very important for having a well-rounded dog. And just make sure that they always have kind of predictable events happening throughout the day. They're not yep. kind of looking to kind of occupy themselves all the time. They should assume that I come out of the crate, I know that this is something that I'm going to be engaging with the owner with, so I need to be ready to play, or I'm ready to eat, or whatever they want me to do. It's not just you come out of the crate, you just screw around, right? Exactly. And quality over quantity in these kind of situations. You don't want to just spend all kinds of time with your puppy out of the crate. The time that they're out of the crate should be a lot more just quality over quantity. And but what I mean by that, you can probably elaborate more.
Yeah, I think anyone who does not create a good schedule for their dog inevitably will have an anxious dog. It's always the case, right? Like, I've never owned an anxious dog, and I now that I see the recipe that can create an anxious dog, I know exactly what people are doing wrong. They don't let their dog rest enough. They don't give their dog enough downtime due to a bad schedule. Their dog has so many options available all the time in the house, so they're losing their mind because they never have downtime and they're wondering, what do I do next? What do I do next? And they start whining and crying and getting worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the fact that they don't have the proper rest makes them more anxious too, right? Mm-hmm. So with a good schedule, your dog should, and it should seem like a lot of hours in the crate. Like, it should seem a little weird at first because it's against conventional knowledge in the dog industry. A puppy should be in the crate if they're young, if they're under 4 months, anywhere from 16 hours, like, for an easygoing dog. It's not a lot, 8 hours overnight, 8 hours during the day. 16 hours for a softer dog, all the way up to, like, 21, 22 hours for, like, a hard, hard dog. You know, like, the dogs that just, when they come out of the crate, they're just assholes. And those dogs, those dogs need more excessive engagement time, and they need to be patterned with a lot of downtime. But yeah, 16 hours is not a lot of time. Like, the dog sleeps overnight, let's say 8 hours. And then if you're going to go to work, I know most people are working from home, but if you're going to go to work during the day, the dog should be used to staying in the crate 8 hours during the day. Obviously, when they're puppies, this should be separated to 2 hours at a time. But you need to get them used to that. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a very good habit to start with a young dog. Anything else for schedule that we need?
No.
Food? So. Yeah, we have. Make sure you put the dog's food on a proper schedule. Get them used to it. Mm-hmm. Some dogs don't do good with a strict schedule, so it just depends what you guys can handle. Mm-hmm. Some dogs can get very, very annoying with a good schedule. So let's say they always eat at 7 and you want to sleep in on Saturday. They're not going to let you because they always eat at 7 and they know they eat at 7 and they can tell the sun rises and about 30 minutes later it's time to eat. So depends on the dog. Mm-hmm. And make sure the dog gets a lot of play at a specific time as well. So you create that. So let's say it's your free time. And it's noon and you want to play with your dog should know, hey, right now is playing time, right? So you want to just create that proper schedule for the dog.
Mm-hmm. You want to schedule your water as well with a new puppy. One of the worst things you can do for their potty training is leave water out all the time. Yeah. And especially if the dog is free roaming, because then they go back and forth to the water. They have a little sip here and there. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, their bladder's full and they're releasing it on the floor.
Exactly.
So one thing to do is make sure that they always have, like, scheduled water times. You can do it like 5 or 6 times throughout the day. Give them a bowl, get them to fill up their belly entirely, and then put them in the crate for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, let it kind of chill and get ready to come out, and then take the dog directly outside and let them go to the bathroom.
A lot of people ask the question of my dog won't drink water. That's normal. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time, but you have to force them. The easiest way to force them is throw something in the water. Kibble, chicken broth, olive oil, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Throw a little bit in the water and they'll chug it. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have a problem with that. That way, if they chug the water and you know exactly in an hour, they have to pee because they just chugged a whole bucket of water. So you want to take them right out in an hour. You've set up your schedule properly. You've made them drink water. Mm-hmm. Set it up in an hour. Take them out. They go out to pee. Play with your dog. Rinse and repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Cool. Step number 4, puppy should be leashed inside. So whenever your dog's out of the crate, it's a good idea to have a leash on. Yes. Whenever your dog is getting into any trouble or anything, if you come at them and grab them with your hands or, like, rip stuff out of their mouth, that becomes very, very confrontational. And then you're kind of setting your dog up to want to have a confrontational sort of interaction with you every time they grab something or they get into something they're not supposed to be doing. Not that they know they're not supposed to be doing it. But the leash provides a much less confrontational way of kind of addressing situations like that, but it also overall just creates a lot of boundaries. Like, even if you just tether it to your couch or just have it near you so you can step on it while they're kind of roaming around the house with you. It really eliminates a lot of the free roaming and keeps them a little bit more engaged with you, a little easier to focus them.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the biggest, like the most underestimated tool in any dog trainer's toolbox or any owner's toolbox is the leash. Mm-hmm. Like, put a leash on the puppy in the house, because if you can't stop them with a leash, you have to stop them physically. And like Cass said, it's conflict. Or if you have a shy, nervous dog, you're going to make them more shy and nervous because you're always adding physical pressure. Mm-hmm. Physical pressure is always, it's not good on many, many
Never
dogs.
Never good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I took a leash off Ashton in my house until he was like, I think he was 7.5 months before I actually had him fully off leash in my house.
Oh, wow.
And I had him off leash on trails, but I didn't have him off leash in the house.
Yeah, because he's like,
because he has troublemaker. Options,
he's a troublemaker. Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah. I mean, he was like sufficiently e-collar trained by that point, but I just wanted to make sure that everything was as structured as possible. So like, if it's not an extra hindrance, it actually makes your life even easier just to clip a leash on. Exactly. Right? And it's a great tool for potty training.
Yeah.
Right? Like if your dog is just roaming around the house, if you have them tethered with you, they're not going anywhere. They're not stepping out of sight where you can't see where they're going to find somewhere to go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
And it makes it easier to just, if you notice they start spinning, reel them in, pick them up, take them outside.
Exactly.
Right? Whereas if they start spinning and they don't have a leash, then they're going to run away from you.
Yeah, you have to run and grab them physically, and then it makes them submissive in that moment.
And then they might pee themselves.
Exactly, on the spot.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, so leash on in the house. I always recommend get a flat collar. That way, if the dog gets caught on something, they can just pull out of it. Make sure there are no ID tags on them because they're in the house. So if they get lost in the house, I don't know how big is your dog. just put a normal flat collar on them and then put a very cheap, thin 6-foot leash on them.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get 10 footers. I like it. I think it's a little too long. 6-foot leash is good. Very thin, very cheap, cut off the handle, and that's your indoor leash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Step number 5, don't let the barking get them anything. So if your dog barks for something, don't give them anything. Don't give them freedom. Don't give them food. Don't give them anything like that. This is the very, very beginning of a lot of pushy behaviors from dogs that can lead to some really serious stuff. Like we end up seeing from adult dogs where dogs are very demanding of affection towards their owners to a point where they even get aggressive, right? Yeah. So that sounds a bit extreme to be talking about with like cute little baby puppies, but this is like the
beginning of
the very origin of these behaviors.
Yeah.
The biggest one, of course, is when your dog barks in the crate and you're like, oh my God, whatever, just shut up. And you let them out of the crate. They learn very quickly that if I bark, I get out of the crate.
Yeah.
Or if I bark at this human, I get food. If I bark at this human, they'll leave me alone with this bone and then all this kind of stuff, you know? Usually barking and then the dog getting what they want out of the barking is one of the worst things that you can teach a puppy.
Barking for a dog is like one of their biggest reinforcers, right? So let's say they see a dog down the street and they're walking and they bark at the dog and then the dog starts walking away. Or let's say that dog reacts back. Your dog is quickly realizing that my bark can open situations for me, create situations, or it can scare away people, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there's a dog and a person walking by your house and your dog barks out the window, what your dog is thinking is my bark is making this person walk away. Mm-hmm. And especially if your dog sees a reaction out of those people, your dog will like it more and more. So if your dog demands things from you by barking day in and day out, your dog is actually asking you to do more things than you're asking your dog to do, right? So you're creating a very backwards and flipped relationship. So imagine if instead of you telling your dog to do things, your dog is every single day telling you to do things. And then let's say a year down the line, you start putting pressure on your dog and boundaries on your dog. Your dog's basically going to go, what the hell? When have you ever made me do things? I'm the one who tells you to do things. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of aggression comes out, especially in, it's going to sound crazy us saying this, but the dogs that are most guilty of doing that are freaking golden retrievers. They will, push and push and push. Like my ex-girlfriend's golden doodle was very pushy towards her.
Mm-hmm.
And when she started taking him home from their walk at around 6.5, 7 months, he would just full out start attacking her, like jumping in the air, biting her. Not like extremely aggressive, but he was definitely being a complete jerk. Yeah. He would just be like, oh, this is the way home. Boom. Jump up, bite, nip, pull her hair, pull her pants, like rip them, everything.
Because he didn't want to go home.
He just didn't want to go home. Wanted to continue his walk.
What a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a jerk.
Oh, man. All right. Next step?
Yeah, next one.
Cool. Step number 6 is don't speak to them like a human. So people usually, they speak way, way, way too much to their dogs. I know usually trainers are always like, oh, just say it once. Say the command once, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That, we speak for gibberish. obvious reason.
Yeah.
Oh, we talk a lot to our dogs.
We talk a lot of gibberish, but we know it doesn't mean anything. And that's why it literally doesn't even make sense, the stuff we say to the dog. It's encouragement.
It does, but I think the way we say it, they don't know what the words mean, yeah. but they know the tone. Like, we're kind of using the tone a little bit strategically, yeah. even though it's kind of fun for us.
Exactly.
Like when we talk to puppies, we're like, was that a baby? Not a baby. Like, we just talk to them and so like stupidly.
How you talk to Zani.
And that Zani.
Yeah.
And it just, the tone kind of hypes them up, but it's yeah. not like...
We don't expect them to understand anything coming out of our mouth. Yeah.
They're just like, wow, they're so excited. I'm going to get excited too. But then when it comes to actually communicating with the dog and trying to get them to understand the words that you're saying to them, it needs to be incredibly clear, short, and very concise. Like, yep. sit.
Yeah.
If you're like, sit, 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 no one knows what you're saying.
Exactly.
If you're saying no to a dog, don't start screaming and like hollering and all this kind of stuff, because yeah. that makes it a little confusing for them too.
And it stresses the hell out of them.
And it stresses them out. And then usually people, especially when they're walking is usually the big one. They're like, oh my God, yes, good job.
Okay.
Good job walking. And then we'll keep going and then take a nice step.
Turn this way. No, let's go over here with
don't
me.
Don't sniff that blade of grass. No. Don't do that.
Not that tree.
We're going to go poo
you
5 minutes
say hi
from
to
now.
Him today. No, like, that, can't what? Say hi to every dog. It's like, okay.
Like, they don't understand
you
any
know
of that
better.
Crap. You know better. That's the best one. The dog yeah. has no freaking clue.
Yeah,
you know better.
Like, I don't know what that means.
They don't know what any of this means.
Yeah.
If you say heel and you show them very clearly through training what a heel is, that gives them all the information they need.
Exactly.
And then if they break those rules, no also gives them all the information
yeah,
they need.
Super
so does good.
Clear English.
Yeah. So use minimal words. Like, most of the dogs that we train, they leave here knowing what, 8 words?
Exactly.
They know good, no,
outcome.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
outcome, place, sit, down.
Yeah. They know no pretty well. I think if we could even make a little list of words we hate the most that people say, like... yeah, I don't like that word at all. What else? I hate...
Shh. The Caesar Milan, shh.
Oh, yeah, that's my least favorite word of all time.
No offense to Caesar, but like... Holy, you guys gotta stop that one.
That one's gotta stop.
That does There's, not work.
I hate you're okay. You're okay.
You're okay.
The dog's like
just
shivering.
Relax. Relax.
The dog's shivering about to shit
itself. Dog's pooping itself.
You're okay. It's like, no, the dog's not.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Or they're full on lunging, trying to bite us. You're okay. Okay. They're nice people.
Yeah. And then they go.
Oh, my God.
They go, oh, stop it.
Stop. My yeah. God.
Yep, there's that.
Oh, man. I think I say that a lot, though, to Ashton. Ashton, stop.
Yeah, I think that's about everything, though. No,
yeah.
There are definitely some other words that I freaking can't stand.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll make a whole podcast.
Yeah,
out of
we
that,
might have to.
Yeah, I definitely don't like you're okay. You're mm-hmm. okay.
You're okay.
Can you stop
it's
saying
okay.
that? I have to stop the client. Can you cut it out?
Please? We should write that on the chalk wall. Okay. Anything we don't want people to say or we don't want to have to repeat to people, we write on the chalk wall.
Yeah.
Some people clue in, some people don't.
Yeah. Okay. So next.
All right. Step number 7, avoid these tools. So we have a list of tools here.
Yeah.
Number 1 is potty pads. The number yeah, one thing just... that potty pads teach your dog is that it's okay to go to the bathroom in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Any 8-week-old puppy, I hope you're getting your puppy by 8 weeks old, is capable of learning to go to the bathroom outside.
Yeah. And if you're... Mm-hmm. If your breeder's ad says the dog is potty pad trained, like, I don't know. I think that's the biggest red flag ever.
That is so whack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you know, but potty pads were actually not designed for puppies. They were designed for older incontinent dogs that couldn't really get outside.
And then
I guess somebody in the PetSmart marketing department just slapped a picture of a puppy on there and was like, oh,
wow.
These suckers are going to come in every week for the rest of the dog's life.
Smart.
It's quite hard to untrain a dog from potty pads once you've already told them, once you've reinforced them for going to the bathroom in the house.
Yeah, and the amount of technology behind puppy pads nowadays, like, first of all, they make ultra-absorbent puppy pads. But then, have you ever seen the puppy pad recycler?
No.
Okay, so it's like this board.
What is it, like?
I've been to a few houses with it, like, with little dogs, Maltese, Yorkies, all, you know, all the little rats.
It's rich people, eh?
Yeah. And, yeah, they have a condo. And then on the balcony, they have a puppy pad rotator, right? So it's like maybe 5 or 6 inches tall, half a foot tall. And it's got a motor in it. So it has a very thick puppy pad on it. And then the puppy goes on it, they pee on it, and then it like...
It rings it out?
It cuts the puppy pad and then like disposes it, throws it out in its little bin, right? And then it rolls out another puppy pad to replace it. It's pretty cool.
What the hell?
I know. I'm like, huh?
That is ultimate laziness.
That is. Like, you don't have to do anything.
That's crazy.
I know. Your dog goes pee, and then you don't have to do anything.
I mean, that's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen those in a couple houses, but...
Holy. Mm. But it's very hard to untrain a dog from that thing.
Yeah, the dog is conditioned to not pee outside. Just remember that. If you ever want your dog to pee outside, you're training your dog not to pee outside with a puppy pad. That's what you're doing. It's just like, huh? Like,
yeah.
Just in that situation, common sense has to just really hit you. Yeah, you want your dog to pee outside, but you're literally training your dog to pee inside.
To pee inside. So
just use your common sense on that one. Okay, other tools?
The Easy Walk / the front clip harness.
Oh boy, yeah.
This is the worst harness.
That's like the worst thing ever for a dog because, yeah, we use harnesses. I use the cheap Rogs one from Global Pet Foods, you know, the very cheap. It was like $6.
Yeah,
That one goes on the puppy. You back clip it, and that's so the puppy can run around and explore on like a long line or a flexi lead, whatever it is. That's just so that they can get used to walking on a leash outside and pee. We don't do that for long. We need them understanding what normal leash pressure feels like pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
But with a harness, yeah, if I want my dog to screw around outside for a bit, as long as I have my dog's engagement, I don't mind if my dog screws around on a harness. That's completely fair, but you need to have engagement. If your dog's already a space case and you're putting a harness on the dog and a flexi and letting your dog screw around more, you're just going to mess up the dog even more. But a front clip harness, you're just going to make your dog hate leash pressure. Your dog will never even feel leash pressure. Your dog will pull against the front clip all the time, and also you're going to create a lot of discomfort by blocking your dog's full range of motion with their legs, and it's a really bad way to start training your puppy. So Easy Walks, front clip, whatever the hell they're called these days, like $90, like who the hell would buy that thing? Okay, next.
I think they're like $38.95 or something like that.
Oh, okay, never mind. And then the Easy Walks?
They were. Okay. They used to be. Okay, I don't know now.
Okay.
You want to talk about any leashes or anything? Bungee leash. A lot of people use the bungee leash with puppies. They're bouncing all around. The bungee leash is like the number one, besides the back facing harness, the number one drive builder. If your dog is like consistently lunging for leaves and twigs and all that kind of stuff on the walk, and they're pulling against a bungee, oh my god, they love that crap.
Yep.
They love it. They're like, oh my god, I'm pulling. This is so fun. Dogs love to pull, especially if you have a bungee leash on. It just makes it so much more comfortable. What else? All the anxiety beds, all the anti-anxiety puppy stuff.
Oh, those are like, horrible. Those are horrible.
Like the anxiety bed, the heartbeat bear, all that extra crap that you throw in the crate.
Trying to think about if there are other things. Go ahead.
The best thing for a puppy in the crate is like just nothing.
Yeah.
Because they get distracted by too much stuff. Beds. For young puppies, I would never have a bed. I would just be so concerned about it being a choking hazard.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
I wouldn't either. Like, they would just destroy beds so quickly, so I wouldn't do that. Anything else? I'm just trying to think. People buy stuff for teething. Like, biggest misconception, people think puppies are teething at 8 weeks old.
Yeah, they're
not.
True.
They're not, so don't get teething stuff then. Yeah, you can get chews, but we'll talk about that on tools to get. Tools to avoid. I think that's about everything. Can't really think of anything else.
So number 8, teach this. Teach this first.
Okay, good.
So number 1 is engagement. So basically, what does that mean? What does engagement mean?
A new puppy. So to get, especially out of a puppy, what you want is you want a lot of engagement at a young age because they have ADD. So if you can really teach them to get all their energy, all their focus, and channel it right into you, you'll have a very easy life training that dog. But the most important thing at a young age is you need to have excessive motivation for a food or a toy, whatever it is. The dog needs to know it's coming from you so that they'll be zoned into you all the time. So ideally, the best way to do this is get their food, go outside, get them really, really, really excited. At the peak of their excitement, you would click or say good, whatever it is, and then reward the dog. After you start teaching that, your dog will realize, this guy wants me giving him everything I got. If I do that, I get rewarded. So then not only are you creating motivation and a way for your dog to get rewarded, you're also teaching the dog that you want effort, a lot of effort towards you, instead of zoning out and focusing on everything else. If you pattern that for a while, your dog will literally only care about you. Like, even with Donna, I could be walking around and I'm wondering where she is. She's always right behind me. And she almost never has a leash on her. And, you know, a lot of people say, like, oh, my puppy was great until my puppy hit 5 months old and then my puppy started screwing off. Donna's going to be 6 months and she has not screwed off yet. She just stays right behind us. And this all comes from engagement. Now, remember, at the beginning of building engagement, you need to have a leash on the dog to prevent them from screwing around and spacing out and doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one, teach engagement.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
Just the eye contact piece that goes along with engagement a lot too.
Yeah.
Basically just if your puppy ever looks you in the eye, make sure you mark it, whether it's your clicker or your good, and deliver a treat as fast as you can.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Most important things aside from that would be their name. Make sure they understand their own name. Recall would be extremely important as well. So your puppy's not going to have perfect, proofed recall by 6 months old.
Yeah.
So make sure you still have the leash on the dog.
Exactly.
Because you never know what can ever pop up in the environment. Best thing to do is whenever you take your dog out, if you want to work on recall, just have a little long line with them dragging around everywhere. The retractable leash is great for this. So if you take your puppy for a walk, walk them on a normal leash, take them to a field, have them on a retractable, practice calling them back. So you call them, lock the leash, and then once they come running back, then you can release the leash and reward them.
Perfect.
Sit down and place would be the most important commands to teach them in the house. Those are going to be your things that help teach the dog how to act in the house, how to settle properly.
I would say for this, wait to teach these commands after engagement. Engagement first, then commands.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you start with boring commands, your dog is going to be very flat. Boring during obedience. And then it's going to be harder to win engagement later because every time you start asking them to do things, they're like, this is freaking boring. The guy makes me sit, he gives me food. It's very boring. I'd rather just screw off. But if you teach excessive engagement and excessive frustration and excitement towards you, your dog's going to like to work. Then when you start teaching the sit down and come, their patterning is going to be for excitement. So they'll do everything with more enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And leash walk, pretty much the only other thing there. Yep. Very short, like 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Extremely short. Take them outside. A lot of people think that leash walking is like the number one source of exercise for dogs. It really shouldn't be. We don't do that at all. We pretty much, I would say I walk my dogs maybe once a week.
Yeah, I know.
At this point, once a week.
I think I may have leash walked Scooter and Broly a total in their life. Like 15 times.
Yeah, like pretty much never.
Yeah.
It's just not something they enjoy whatsoever. Yeah. Like, it's something they're like indulging us in. It's something that's more for the human that we enjoy. For dogs, they like to do high excitement activities. So, like, they like to play frisbee, they like to play ball, they love to run around with each other or run around with you. Best toy, I think, for the puppy is like a flirt pole. Run around with a little flirt pole or a ball in your backyard.
Agreed.
Or a little tug toy. Tug is a little tricky when they start teething, but everything else is good. And then you can start really, really short walks. And the whole point of the walk is not for the exercise. It's more for the exposure to all of the different things that exist in the environment. So like garbage trucks, TTC, that means bus for for everyone who's not from Toronto. Like all kinds of stuff, dump trucks, all that kind of stuff that would scare puppies. You want to make sure that they see those things, have it in kind of short, basic exposures, and then heavily reward, and then just go home.
Exactly.
Make sure they're paying really good attention to you. They notice, oh my God, there's all these dogs out here, all these humans. I'd rather hang out with my human instead of just engaging with all these little useless things.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, super important. Super important. What are we on still?
We're on, was number 8.
Teach this? Are we done? Well, for the socialization, anything else to add? I think we'll talk a lot about it on work on weaknesses, but so far that's good.
Okay, yeah. So number 9 is don't do this. So we have another list here.
Oh, we'll probably be here for a while.
Don't do this. I have 3 things written down here. So number 1 is don't leave toys out all the time. Having an abundance of anything is just decreasing the value of what you want the dog to be playing with. So if you actually leave toys out all the time, your dog's toy value will heavily, heavily decrease because the toys are just being boring and sitting there. And they're always available. So when you want to try to get your dog's attention with a ball outside, they're not going to care. They're like, I have ball inside all the time. Why would I care about that when there are squirrels out here? When there are deer out here, sticks, all that kind of stuff, right? So don't leave the toys out. And if you ever have a dog that's, say, your golden retriever, who has any like resource guarding tendencies, that will create a big problem.
Yep. If toys lie everywhere in the house and you have a possessive dog, not only will they guard the toys, they'll guard the space that the toys are historically existing in.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's on the couch every day or near the couch, the dog will start guarding the area around the couch. So bad idea.
Contrary to what the internet says, because it says if you leave all those resources out in abundance, it'll make the dog's guarding go down.
It's so stupid.
Because I guess they're trying to say that it's because the same thing I'm saying is the value increases or decreases, but it's not true.
It's like a slight bit true, but if you have a very possessive dog, like, you're literally just creating a ticking time bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you have a mildly possessive dog, that might
ticking
work.
Ticking time bomb, it's more like a minefield exactly. in your house.
Yeah, it is literally a minefield.
Yeah. Number two, don't leave food out. So don't leave food out all the time. We basically talked about that in the first step, the work for food step. Same thing as the food, kind of. So you can run into issues of the food value going down. When you need it outside for training, it's not going to be there. The value is not going to be there for most dogs. So that's a bad thing to do.
Yep.
Number three that I have here is don't worry about jumping. Yeah. So a lot of people, they come in, they have this like nervous wreck of a puppy, and they're like, oh, and I also want to stop its jumping.
I know. I don't want this dog jumping. I don't want That's like their number one thing. They're like, I have this 8-week-old puppy. I want to teach it the world's most boring commands. I also don't want it jumping on anybody. Like, yeah, okay. Okay, that's fine. Why don't you at the same time teach your kid who's like four years old.
Never to make eye contact with humans.
Never to talk to any friends. Never to give anyone a hug. And also never to... What's another bad one? Because sit's boring. Okay, why don't you teach him only do math and not play any sports? Why don't you just do that while you're at it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just you'll destroy your dog's overall confidence, and you won't see the repercussions of that until your dog hits a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll see some bad repercussions.
So let them jump for a few months. Like, if you have a super confident dog, let them jump until, like, 6 months.
Exactly.
If they're not super, super big. The dog's
very confident. Like, yeah, they don't need to be a trampoline if they're super confident. Yeah. If they're nervous, they do need to show some confidence by jumping on things. Mm-hmm. Jumping on people, jumping on dogs, whatever it is, but they need to show some confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know this is tricky if you have like a nervous Great Dane puppy. That is going to be a little hard because you do want to stop the jumping. But you'll just have to be more strategic about who you let the dog around. Like if I have a Great Dane that's very nervous, I wouldn't bring it to go see my like 80-year-old grandma.
Yeah.
I just know that would be a bad situation. So I'd bring it around people who would help build the dog's confidence first.
Wow, he would
and
crush
then
her.
I know, right? and then you can start exposing to those other situations, but like later down the road.
Yeah.
You want to make sure all of the first exposures to things for your puppy are like constructive for them. You're not just doing them just to indulge other people.
Exactly.
Right? Like if your dog is a little afraid of men, make sure it's at least okay with women before you start throwing it into the hands of every single man. Like, if it can't even get comfortable with something less intimidating, then it's not going to work up to saying hi to a man right off the bat, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Even to elaborate on that, I've never seen a dog. So, like, you should definitely let your dog jump on people, a puppy, at a young age. I've never seen a dog so excessively anxious around people in my whole life because... You know, like, so excited to go see people that they can't focus on anything, right?
Oh, you've never seen that?
I don't think I have seen that. If we have seen it,
have
we've been
Freddy?
Able to...
have you met my
but
parents?
But we've though? Always been able to stop it, though, very easily. Like even
Oh, we have.
Even, like, a dog that's very heightened is way easier to stop them on their excitement towards humans, which is never crazy, as opposed to if they're overexcited by dogs.
Yeah, because dogs are more fun. Humans are boring.
So that's the point I'm trying to make. Because
okay, gotcha.
What you don't want to do is let your dogs be as excited as possible around humans. Because no matter what you do, your dog will never be as excited around humans as they are if they go to a dog park and play around with dogs all day. Because that euphoric feeling they get with playing around with dogs, they will be so overexcited and like all their hormones will be pumping and they'll be so crazy to go see other dogs that it's going to be very hard to restrain them in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's more built into them to be overexcited around dogs than around humans. So what you should do is, yeah, let your dog meet lots of humans. But if you decide to take your dog to a dog park or a very exciting dog environment and you do that a few times and then later you start complaining about your dog liking dogs or being too excited to see dogs and being completely uncontrollable on leash, that was 100% created by you.
Mm-hmm.
100%. You chose to get your dog so excited with dogs, but you did not provide the same level of excitement yourself and through fun. So now your dog, all they want to do is they're like, you know what? I don't have that much fun doing anything else. I'm going to try everything I can to go play with dogs. So that's another important thing. Don't let your dog, it's part of the don't do this list. Don't let your dog become too excited and fixated around dogs. Very important.
Okay.
Very important.
Cool. Do you have anything else to add to that one?
I don't think so. Don't do this list.
Don't do this list.
There's a lot. Don't correct the shit out of your dog. That's pretty important.
Yeah, don't
A lot of people
get
puppies
your puppy.
And... you know, like, they will, they'll be very hard on their puppy. A lot of conflict in the relationship because they have no control.
Mm-hmm.
So what a lot of people do is the less control you have, the less of a sharp relationship you guys have, the more compulsion almost everyone uses, right? Because mm-hmm. they get frustrated.
Yeah.
Focus on building the good relationship so you don't have to correct the dog that hard. But what a lot of people do is they let the dog do whatever the hell they want, the puppy. They let the puppy do whatever the hell they want. And then when they get frustrated, they have no choice but to, like, restrain the dog. Some people alpha roll the freaking dog.
Yeah, don't alpha roll. That should be on the list,
too. In case anyone's wondering what that is, that's when you put the dog on their side. Very old school information. Number one way to get bit by a dominant dog. If you have a pretty dominant dog and you do that, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're literally screwed. Don't provide too much conflict in the relationship. Mm-hmm. That's important. Other things, I can't really think of too much else. Because I'm thinking about everything that we're doing. Oh, don't let them pick stuff up off the ground. Very important.
Yeah.
If you're going for a walk with your dog and your dog's just sniffing everything and trying to pick everything up, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like little Donna always picks up sharp things in our junkyard. She just goes to the junkyard and she's like, oh, look, a knife. She starts running around.
Don't tell them that. She picks up just sharp sticks.
Yeah, sharp sticks. And she just jumps and tries to stab everybody.
She's so crazy. Oh, man. All right. Step number 10, work on their weaknesses. So just be really transparently honest with yourself about what your dog needs improvement with. It's usually nerves. It's usually the dog is nervous.
We should elaborate on nerves. So if your dog is cautious in new environments, that's a heavy, heavy weakness. Take your dog to new environments.
Yep.
There's no other way to fix that besides taking your dog to new environments, slowly progressing the difficulty of the environment. So let's say today you go to a family member's house and it kind of looks like your house, but it's not that different, but your dog clearly knows it's another indoor environment. That could stress them out, but it's going to stress them out way less than if you took them to Costco or something.
Indoors.
They're going to be like, holy crap, what the hell's going on here? So slowly progress on the indoor environments, because we see every single puppy we've seen in the past year has not seen what another indoor environment looks like. And then when they come
it's
in here, freeze.
It's pretty bad.
They literally all freeze.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's nerves on environmentals. Any other examples on nerves? Dogs and humans.
Yeah, just
If your dog is nervous or just has a huge weakness being around new people, I would say over every single thing on this list, that is the number one priority for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to introduce this dog, counter condition the dog every single day. It could take like over a year or two to get your dog even somewhat comfortable around strangers, but counter condition every single day, build a lot of motivation for food, build a lot of motivation for a toy, and have that as the counter conditioning tool with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're nowadays meeting more nervous puppies than ever, than I've ever seen.
And, yeah.
I've seen a lot of nervous puppies in my life. I grew up in Scarborough. I don't know if you guys know where Scarborough is, but Scarborough is the backyard breeding capital of the planet.
I don't know about that.
Well, now it's probably
now it definitely
now
is.
It's Oshawa.
Now it is. Yeah,
Oshawa. But Scarborough used to have all of the shepherd labs, shepherd huskies, and people were proud of it.
Rottweilers.
Like Rottweiler shepherds, Rottweiler huskies.
Evil Yorkies.
Yorkies literally look like grasshoppers. So, you know, one second they're on the ground, then they're flying through the air. Their hair is like the little flaps on the grasshopper legs, you know? And they start flying through the air like this and they're biting.
And they try to bite you in the face. They're crazy.
Yeah.
They go for like the neck bite.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
And people breed these dogs with terrible freaking temperaments. So I used to go to people's houses for a lot of training sessions back in Scarborough. And I went to a lot of the houses in Scarborough and they would say, oh, my dog is not good with anyone in my family. Like, what am I doing wrong? And then I go there and I'm like, your dog is just, you just have a crappy dog. Like, I just have to tell it to you as it is. Mm-hmm. You have a horribly, horribly made dog made by a moron. It's always like a rotty lab, rotty shepherd.
Yeah.
Right. So, and like my biggest concern is when I go to their house and the dog looks at me, 8 weeks old, 9 weeks old, runs away and like hides under a bed.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen that way too many times in my life. And I just like, you're screwed before you even got the dog. The second you talk to that person, you're already screwed, and then you own the dog and that dog's gonna be a bite risk 100%. Yeah,
I feel like we see this a lot recently with dogs that are bred for color.
Yep.
Minus that one Frenchie that we saw. We have that one blue Merle Frenchie, Levi.
Oh, he's a nice boy.
I know, that's what I mean. Like, he's very obviously bred for color, but he is so sweet and so confident. He's pretty confident, right?
He's
I don't know. I didn't really work with
him. He's kind of confident. He's just
a
Frenchie. They're all confident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's okay. But a lot of like those like tri-color merle dachshunds.
Frenchies, dachshunds. Yeah, evil.
They're nervous. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So nervous. What you should do is like, you should, if you have a dog and you think there's a weakness, even if you have a puppy, you should call a trainer or mm-hmm. call a friend or whatever, someone who knows a lot about dogs. Ask them, hey, you think my dog is like weak in any areas? Or even be real with yourself. But most people can't be real with their own puppies. Mm-hmm. Just ask yourself, hey, is my dog good with strangers or bad with strangers? We'll even give you the spectrum right now. If your dog sees a stranger, we'll take my puppy Donna, for example. And I always talk about Donna because I think she's just bred perfectly. I think that girl is bred so perfectly.
Yeah.
But if she sees a stranger down the street, she will run up to them and act as if she's known them her whole life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. She's super excited to see them. Very, very happy. Rolls on her back, lets them pet her. And then when she's done, she'll run right back to me. She'll get the affection in and she's super happy about it and she leaves. If your dog sees a stranger and is not happy to see them,
mm-hmm.
and is not willing to go right up to them and take all the affection around, I would consider your dog not amazing with strangers. Mm-hmm. Dog's just okay with strangers. If your dog sees a stranger and runs away, you have big problems.
Mm-hmm.
If your dog sees a stranger and is cautious, that's the beginning of big problems, right? If you have a puppy that's cautious of humans, like not okay with strangers, doesn't warm up immediately, I've never seen that turn out well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's just mild, but it always gets worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other weaknesses are environmentals. If you go to any environment and your dog is so fixated on the environment they can't focus on you or take food, huge environmental weaknesses. If mm-hmm. your dog sees stuff and barks at it instead of focusing, big environmental weakness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything to add?
Not really.
Okay.
I think the only real weaknesses are just the things that the dog genetically has that you need to kind of be on top of, right?
Exactly.
But I guess if you see weaknesses in your own training, like, is my dog able to settle? Or is, like, even if you just take nerves out of the equation, is the dog able to settle in the house? Is the dog having fun playing with me? What are the weaknesses in your training? Not necessarily just the weaknesses in the dog personally, too. Just try to figure out what you want out of a dog and then try to figure out how to get there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. So to just recap on that, if your dog is social with humans,
mm-hmm.
it's not something you need to work on. It's not a weakness.
Exactly.
Right. If your dog is social with dogs, if you bring the dog to a dog park, you will make the dog overly excited around dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So you're turning something that was already a positive into a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So just work on the weaknesses. Let's say they're good with dogs, but not that good with humans. You have no reason to heavily socialize that dog with dogs. Just focus on the human aspect because that's a weakness. If your dog is great with humans and dogs, but goes to a new environment and cannot focus on you for 1 second, that's a weakness. Work on mm-hmm. that. That's all you need to work on. You don't need to work on the humans and dogs because your dog's already good there. Focus on the environmental sensitivities. Loud noises. If your dog's horrible with loud noises, mm-hmm. work on loud noises. What else? I think that's it.
I think that's it.
If your dog's obedience is bad, build the food motivation, develop motivation. But mm-hmm. yeah, that should be your focus. Work on their weaknesses. That's all you need to do. Great. Cool. So I think that's pretty much everything. We're going to get this made into a little PDF for download, and we're going to have it up for a lot of people. But it's going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot more information on that than this. So me and Cass are working on that right now. And this podcast was just so people can listen to it and get right to work on their puppies, because we know a lot of people have new puppies right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope you guys enjoyed. We'll try to do a few more of these. We'll elaborate more on raising a puppy properly, but we just thought we'd make a very quick 10-step podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Take care.